Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
All right. How is everybody? If you're like me, you're doing fine. You're hanging in there. My head hurts. Like literally, I have a terrible headache today. I'm exhausted. I'm terrified. My mental health is probably not where it should be. And much of that is due to the contents of today's episode. As you can see, it is titled The End of the American Experiment. Whether or not a question mark deserves to be there, I'll let you decide. Before we dive in, I'm going to note I am going to try here recording again with my camera. I've been doing some episodes with, some episodes without, just trying to, I haven't put a lot of effort into trying to make sure that for whatever reason, when I talk, it like lags and my mouth doesn't always line up with the words. But I also don't think you guys are really like watching me, looking at me down in the corner. So yeah, I'll just leave it up there for now. Let me know if it bothers you or what. Okay, this episode, on the podcast, we typically try and do episodes that are principles of collapse, right? They're evergreen. They're not really present happenings. We leave that more for the Patreon episodes. This is too big for a Patreon episode, and it's too important. This is not, well, let's actually just go to that slide. What is not happening here, and what is this episode not? This episode, first of all, I didn't list this here. But this episode is not just a news story. We're talking about something here that is a massive deal for the future of humanity. You'll notice that second point says that this is not just an American-only issue. Even though in the title we're talking about the American experiment, this episode is not just for an American audience. This is critical to the future of the entire world. This is not like Trump's first term. As we talk about this, it's very important to note that the second term of Donald Trump, as you have probably noticed, is very unlike his first term. One of the people we're going to talk about today, Curtis Yarvin, he wrote in between Trump's first and second terms that Donald Trump could not do in his second term what he did in his first term if he was to take control as was needed and desired. He noted that Donald Trump in his first term took office, but he did not take power, and that in his second term, he was going to have to take power. And we'll talk more about that later in the episode. This is not the whimsical daydreaming of the techno-billionaire class. What we're talking about today is the ultimate end game for billionaires. What are they trying to accomplish? How are they going to accomplish it? And what does it mean for us? When we talk about the whimsical daydreaming of billionaires, you know, you think of like, I don't remember the guy's name. There's some dude that's like shooting up with his son's blood to try and live forever. These guys, you know, the whole longevity thing, that's a whimsical daydream to me of a billionaire. Billionaires who are trying to like make it to Mars and I don't know. The types of things that make you just like shake your head and be like, wow, these guys are weirdos, but whatever. Spend their money on it, keep them out of my face, and that's good enough. This is what we're talking about today is not just some like make-believe fantasy of billionaires. It's something that they're putting into action. It's also not me making this stuff up. I this information comes from multiple different sources. Blonde Politics has a really great video that I can link to in the description. Gil Duran has an entire blog where this is pretty much all he talks about. Really good stuff there. Robert Evans from the Behind the Bastards podcast has done multiple episodes on Curtis Yarvin, who I just mentioned, and others on the topic of this. And lastly, this is not a conspiracy theory. A conspiracy theory is a secret, right? You assume that whoever is doing something is doing it in secret. And so you're the only one that knows about it. And like, you're bringing to light some sort of crazy new information that you heard from a source who heard it from a source who knew about this secret. Pizzagate was a conspiracy theory, right? Some secret cabal of elites were trafficking children in the basement of a pizza parlor. Lizard people is a conspiracy theory. Jewish space lasers are a conspiracy theory, right? They all are this idea that like the CIA or the government or whatever, there's this secret going on that we don't know about. If Hillary Clinton and other elites, I remember this was around the Hillary Clinton timeline, so this is what people were talking about. If Hillary Clinton had done a press conference or a podcast, if she had done an interview or written a book in which she said, hey, us elites, we have children that we are trafficking in the basement of this pizza parlor, and here's why we're doing it, and here's our plan with that, and blah, blah, blah. It would no longer be a conspiracy theory because she told you they were doing it. And that is the reason why what we're talking about today is not a conspiracy theory. The billionaires are telling us word for word. They've laid it out in books, in podcasts, in interviews, in whatever format they can. They're telling us what they're trying to accomplish. We just don't always listen because we, again, look at it as the whimsical daydreaming of the billionaire class. We say these weirdos with their money, you know, they want to accomplish this stuff, but it could never happen. Well, it's happening, and it is important to take a look at. So you, going into this episode, you may already know what I'm talking about. This may be a summation of something that you have recently discovered that you've read about, or you may be like, what the crap is Corey going on about? So either way, I think this will be a good episode to listen to. Pay attention, and we'll see where it takes us. The techno-billionaire class now runs the U.S. government, and it may not be super obvious on like, for, you know, you look at it and it feels like it's the Donald Trump show and right now the Elon Musk show, but there is so much more than that. There are a lot of guys behind the scenes that are pulling strings you may or may not have heard of and what their ideologies are. So let's take a look at some of the main players. This is not everybody, but this is several of the names that you should know and that I think you will come to know much more in the future. So the first obviously is Elon Musk. We all know Elon Musk. I'm going to go through and read these names and also the subheading here that I've written. Elon Musk is a billionaire entrepreneur, CEO of Tesla and SpaceX, owner of X, and a controversial figure known for his ambitious technological ventures, political influence, and unpredictable public statements. Peter Thiel is a billionaire venture capitalist, co-founder of PayPal and Palantir, early Facebook investor and a political influencer known for his libertarian, anti-democratic views and support for right-wing causes. Mark Andreessen is a billionaire venture capitalist, co-founder of Netscape and Andreessen Horowitz, and a prominent tech investor known for advocating deregulation, AI expansion, and political influence in Silicon Valley and beyond. And by the way, I mentioned Andreessen Horowitz there. Ben Horowitz is his partner, another multi-billionaire. I didn't list him here, but he's kind of just in the same vein as Mark. Brian Armstrong, billionaire co-founder and CEO of Coinbase, a major cryptocurrency exchange. He advocates for decentralized finance, minimal government regulation, and supports libertarian ideas like Balaji Srinivasan's network state concept. We'll go into that later. Balaji Srinivasan. Did I spell his name wrong there? I think it's Srinivasan, not Srinivasan. My apologies to Balaji. Actually, I don't apologize. He's a dick. Tech entrepreneur, former Coinbase CTO, and venture capitalist. He advocates for decentralized governance, cryptocurrency, and the network state, a vision for digitally native sovereign communities beyond traditional nation states. And lastly, Curtis Yarvin, a.k.a. Mencius Moldbug. That was like his alias. He's a political theorist and software engineer known for founding the neo-reactionary movement He advocates replacing democracy with monarchy or corporate governance led by technocratic elites. So as I read off each of these names and a little bio about them, you probably noticed some hints about the things we're going to talk about in this episode. There's some anti-democratic views here. They're all, again, techno-billionaires, so they're all in the tech world. They have built companies around AI, cryptocurrency, security, these types of things. I will mention that Balaji and Curtis are not billionaires, but they play a major role in the conversation. So how are they connected? Here's a little slide about relationships. If you are listening to the podcast without the slides, I'm going to explain this verbally as well. The slides, this is a whole Mod Podge, right? This is a mess of arrows and boxes, and this is not the only way in which these people are connected. There are dozens of connections that I am missing here, but I've just spelled out, I think, some of the most important ones, and we'll go through these really quick. So on the right, I have Elon Musk. Elon Musk is associated with most of the people on this list, with Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz. Thiel Musk and Andreessen were all founders of PayPal together in the early 2000s. That's where they got their start. That's where they made their first money that they have now transitioned into multi-billions. Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz. Balaji was actually a partner at the Andreessen Horowitz firm. Balaji was also CTO at Brian Armstrong's company called Coinbase. Curtis Yarvin was considered Thiel's in-house philosopher. He was also, Thiel is a longtime reader of Curtis Yarvin's work and has financially backed him throughout his entire career. Thiel recommended Balaji for the FDA position under Trump. He tried to get Balaji put into Trump's administration in his cabinet. Peter Thiel invests heavily in Coinbase, which is Brian Armstrong's company. All right, look, that's just a big mess of ways saying that these people are all related. The point that I'm trying to make is these people all work together. They all know each other. They're all familiar with each other's ideas and thoughts and philosophies. And for the most part, they all agree on what they want the future to look like. There might be minor differences in how they think they should get there, maybe some minor differences in how that future will be run. But for the most part, they have very similar ideas, and we'll get to those ideas here in just a minute. Here's a couple things that they have said. So the first is a quote from Peter Thiel. This was back in, I believe, 2009. Quote, "Most importantly, I no longer believe that freedom and democracy are compatible." Peter Thiel is openly anti-democratic. And I will say that when he talks about freedom, it's fairly obvious, especially in the way that he talks about it in some of his other sources. He's not talking about freedom for the American people. He's talking about freedom for billionaires. He feels restricted that he cannot do the things that he wants to do because of democracy, because everyone should have a choice in what the future is like. Peter Thiel believes that he should have control of what the future is like, he and his billionaire pals. Elon Musk has said, quote, "I have given up on democracy, quite frankly." He also is quite openly anti-democratic. I don't need to, like, instill in you the impact that should have on our minds in considering Elon Musk's current role in the Trump administration. And again, we'll come back to that in a moment. So what is the end game? Billionaires are not dumb. They're not these guys who just have a bunch of money and, like, aren't paying attention to what's going on. When you think of the collapse aware, the collapse fear, these billionaires know what's going on. They know that society is headed down. They know the trajectory, right? And in particular, these American billionaires see the writing on the wall, and they know that the American empire will collapse, that it is collapsing, that China is overtaking us. They know that they essentially know that the American experiment is failing. And they want to accelerate it. They want to speed up the process because they want to have control over that collapse. And when you are a multi-billionaire and you have the type of resources and power and network that they have, they believe that, number one, they can control it, And number two, they believe that they should. These are a people who are highly exclusive. They are narcissistic. They believe that they are better than everyone else, that their money and they believe that their money comes from their intelligence. Again, we'll come back to this point in a few slides. But they think that because they have the money, that they are the smartest, the best, and that they deserve to rule. And they know that unlike us, they have an out, or that they can buy or create an out, a safety, a safe haven, whatever you want to call it, right? A lifeboat that as the rest of us sink, they have a way to stay afloat. So now let's talk a little bit about what their sort of end game is, what they think the future should be like. These are a few examples of books or institutes, thought ideas surrounding these billionaires. So the first is Balaji. Again, Balaji is not a billionaire himself, but his relationship with other billionaires, they agree with him on this book. They agree with him on his thoughts and what he's trying to accomplish, what his vision for the future is. It's called a network state. And essentially, I've put in quotes here at the top of the slide, technological utopia, because that's how they make this look. They want people to believe that this is some brilliant future driven by cryptocurrency, essentially in which we get rid of our current way of doing government and our current way of viewing territory and states. They believe that we should have a highly technological digital governance run by cryptocurrency and protected by AI and a military surveillance state. Their idea is that we would have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of micro states, micro regions, I guess you could say, that would each be governed individually, and that all the laws and rules and everything that you would have to follow would be unique to the area you live in, that you could go between areas. The network state and Yarvin's Patchwork essentially are the same idea. Yarvin's book is called Patchwork, A Political System for the 21st Century. He wrote it again under the alias of Mencius Moldbug. I don't know if he just hates his name or I would have to look into that name. There's probably some racist meaning behind it. I don't know. But anyway, that said, this is their version of the future. Thiel, on the right here, I've got a picture called from his, it's the logo from his institute that's called the Seasteading Institute. He advocated for basically building cities on the ocean because that is an area that is not currently governed. You can basically be your own state. You can create your own rules, your own sovereignty, essentially, if you were to build floating cities on the ocean where all the billionaires could live together and they would not have to live amongst us plebes and, you know, have to follow the rules of existing governments. They do believe in completely having new governments with new ruling ideas, which we'll talk about in a second. They also believe that the infrastructure should be new, that we shouldn't build on the current cities that already exist. We should be building up new independent cities in individual and new localities. Okay. However, this view that they have, which they present as a utopia, is much more like a dystopia. As you actually read behind the lines, and some of it you don't have to, like, it's pretty on the nose. They are, again, telling us exactly what they mean. These societies would be, and I'm going to read all of these and then we can go through them, genocidal, eugenistic, which I don't know if eugenistic is a word, involving eugenic, military-grade security, AI surveillance. It would be autocratic and fascistic, and it would basically be techno-feudalism. Genocidal. Like I mentioned, they believe that their race, their class, is deserving of what they have. It is highly about intelligence. This is something that both Yarvin and Balaji have spoken about. Balaji is more outspoken on this point, that after several generations of simply only allowing the most intelligent of people and only breeding the most intelligent of people, that you would have basically an entirely different species than Homo sapiens. He talks about leaving Homo sapiens behind and creating a new evolutionary species that is highly intelligent. So what does that mean for the rest of us? I'm trying to remember, I think it was Yarvin who wrote one time joking about, he said he was joking, what about all the other people? Those who are not the smartest, those who are not the intelligent, those who are not the wealthy. What's to be done with them? Because they know, again, and they admit that we are in overshoot, that there's too many people, and that keeping everybody alive is expensive. They look at, you can see right now what Donald Trump and Elon Musk are doing to aid to government programs that support people. They don't want to spend money on supporting people. And so Yarvin, again, joking, talked about how those people could be used for biofuel to keep the buses moving, essentially. And he said, oh, okay, ha, 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 I'm just joking. And there was a follow-up statement that he made. This was pointed out in the Blonde Politics video about this. And I cannot remember exactly what his follow-up was, but it was along the lines of like, those people don't belong with us. They are not meant to be here. It's genocidal. It's eugenistic, right? And then they talk about AI surveillance and military-grade security. Peter Thiel himself owns Palantir, which is essentially a military and corporate security company based around highly technological aspects of security. We've done episodes on AI and the surveillance state that could come from it. And as AI rapidly progresses, as facial technology, voice technology, all sorts of different things come about, these future, quote, utopias that they're trying to create could be policed. And it's Big Brother, right? Every move you make could be tracked by an AI surveillance. It would be autocratic and fascistic. They have no qualms about stating that, again, democracy is not the aim here, and that democracy has been a terrible idea, and that we should have essentially a monarchy. We should have one person in charge making all the decisions and all the rules. One of the quotes, and I think this one was from Yarvin, a quote saying that it should be governed by its own corporations without regards to the residents' opinions. And I'm going to correct myself here. I should have written it down. I think this was actually Balaji in the Network States that wrote this. Governed by corporations without regards to residents' opinions. Essentially, you can leave if you want, go to a different micro state, live somewhere else if you don't agree with our rules, but you do not get any say in what the rules are, in what we do. And then lastly, techno-feudalism. It is this idea that essentially they would own everything. They are the wealthiest people on earth. The rest of us who might have debt, who don't have millions of dollars, we would go back to a feudalist time in which they would own everything. We could rent it from them through our labor and work simply to live. Now, that doesn't sound too much different from today. We do work to live. But what's interesting is, we're talking about a time where with AI and the type of, that there may be a decrease in the need for the amount of labor. However, they do recognize and they do say that much labor will be imported. People will be brought in to do work for those who live in these societies. However, those people are not to be considered residents there. They are simply those who keep it functioning. How messed up is this, guys? We're talking about slave labor, essentially, and those people not being treated as citizens and not even being treated as people. So I don't need to, you can get creative and imaginative about what this future would actually look like, right? Things that come to mind for me are like, I read Red Rising recently, right? And it's basically, I don't actually think we're going to go out and populate the stars, but on Earth, I could see us living this way, where it is a ruling class of wealthy and everyone else is enslaved, essentially, you know, divided amongst each other, highly surveilled. If you read the book, you know what I'm talking about. Also, like Hunger Games, right? The population has decreased severely. There is a group of people who rule everybody else. Those people are divided into classes and they do labor in order to keep the main wealthy city flowing and working. They are enslaved. They are surveilled. They are punished. There is no democracy. There's no choice. You simply do what you're told to do when you're told to do it. And if not, you pay the consequences. Okay. So that, I mean, all of that is like, wow, these billionaires really want to screw us over. But why isn't this just some like whimsical daydream that they have? What takes it from that to becoming something that's actually threatening? Well, there's lots of links now to these men in the White House. I've listed here on this slide on the left side, the billionaires that we just discussed, Curtis Yarvin, Balaji. Again, I keep saying billionaires. These two are not. Mark Andreessen, Brian Armstrong, Ben Horowitz. They all have connections to Peter Thiel. And Peter Thiel has connections to people now in the White House. And it's not just that he has connections with them. Peter Thiel placed them there. Peter Thiel has funded, in many ways, he has donated to Donald Trump directly. There are photos of him and Donald Trump. It is known that they are friendly, that they are friends, whatever you want to call that, associates. Donald Trump himself is a billionaire. And we'll talk about Donald Trump and his place in all of this in a moment. But let it be known, Peter Thiel is in cahoots with, is buddy-buddy with Donald Trump. You may have heard that J.D. Vance is essentially Peter Thiel's little puppy dog, right? Peter Thiel donated $15 million to J.D. Vance's congressional effort, to his Senate run. It is the most money that has ever been donated to a candidate for Senate. Say what you will about whether or not J.D. Vance is like bought out by, or like he has to do what Peter Thiel says. It seems fairly obvious to me that not only are they aligned ideologically, Peter Thiel has done the work to pay J.D. Vance to get him on, you know, get J.D. Vance on his side, in his ear. And not only that, but Peter Thiel is likely the reason that J.D. Vance is in the spot that he's in. J.D. Vance is a weird pick for vice president for Donald Trump. And there, to me, is no doubt that Peter Thiel is the reason that J.D. Vance was the pick. And if we go beyond that, it's not just, that's not just a conjecture. That's not just, Peter Thiel is the reason, we know this, that Michael Anton is the U.S. Security Council now, that it's the U.S. National Security Council, and that Michael Kratsios is the CTO, the U.S. CTO, which is a thing. Usually you think of a CTO as like a corporate position. It is also a position in the White House. So Michael Kratsios worked at Thiel Capital. He has these same ideas of the future as Peter Thiel and the others. You can read some of what Michael Kratsios has talked about. It's all disgusting. Same thing with Michael Anton. He wrote something called the Flight 93 election. This was essentially a blog article that he had written, and it is also gross and terrifying. These men are so, again, they're so anti-democratic, openly so. They are pro-autocracy, dictator, whatever you want to call it. I think Michael Anton even mentions the word dictator in his article, if I'm remembering the right one. Go through, read it for yourself. These are men that Peter Thiel told Donald Trump, you should put them in your White House, and he did. He did the same thing with Balaji. He tried to get Balaji put in to the FDA. That one was rejected. And then lastly, of course, we have Elon Musk, who has relationships with all of these men. And there's no doubt, as we watch what Elon Musk is doing, what his aims are. So all of this to say that we now have Donald Trump, who is doing the things that he's doing currently. We have Michael Anton, Michael Kratsios, J.D. Vance, and Elon Musk, all of whom are in the ears of Peter Thiel. I should say maybe Peter Thiel is in their ears. And all of them are associated with these other billionaires that we've spoken about and the ideologies of Curtis Yarvin and Balaji. Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance, both constantly, they are talking about Curtis Yarvin. They're talking about Balaji's ideas. J.D. Vance, there are video clips of him talking about Curtis Yarvin, talking about his ideology, agreeing with his ideology. And whether or not you believe that J.D. Vance, you know, has read Curtis Yarvin's work and agrees with it or not, even though he says he has, he is constantly spouting Yarvin's points. He is talking about the future and the way that he's going to obtain that future in the same way that Curtis Yarvin talks about it. And so we can dive into that a little bit here. I'm not going to go into detail of the butterfly revolution. This was written by Yarvin, but I think I'll do an episode on this in the near future if people are interested. If this episode caught people's attention and they like it and they want to go into more detail, then we can talk about this in full. Project 2025, which, by the way, right, Donald Trump always said, I don't even know what Project 2025 is. I've never heard of it before. It's got some weird stuff in there, though. And obviously, he was lying. At this point, it's been said that 2/3 or more of the executive orders that Donald Trump has issued in the first 2 weeks of his presidency were directly related to Project 2025 and what it described. And there's plenty of time left for him to continue to execute those orders and new orders. Project 2025 is very similar to the Butterfly Revolution. Curtis Yarvin wrote this as essentially his playbook for how democracy in the U.S. could be dismantled. Part of that is something called RAGE, R-A-G-E, which is Retire All Government Employees. That shouldn't, you know, that should sound familiar. That shouldn't be too much of a stretch to see that that is what's happening. Donald Trump is working. This was in Project 2025. The stated goal is remove the what they call the deep state, drain the swamp. But they're going beyond just what we might consider as, like, you know, when they talk about the deep state, usually you think of like the leaders of organizations who might be pulling strings the way they view it. But they are talking about everybody. Everybody who is not a Donald Trump supporter, MAGA supporter, needs to be fired and kicked out and replaced with Trump loyalists. Project 2025 talked about this, and Trump did this before the election. They built a site, a personnel database I've listed here, of MAGA supporters who may be able to run or work in those areas, whether or not they're qualified. And we're seeing that so many of Trump's cabinet picks are not qualified. Again, that was something that was also written about in the Butterfly Revolution, this need to create a database so that when he's elected, he could flood these institutions with his followers. Talks about how to dismantle the administrative state, which we're seeing happen, ignoring the courts. Again, written in the Butterfly Revolution, we're watching Trump actively right now do things that are illegal, ignoring court orders and pushing forward. Declare emergency and nationalize the police force. Okay, as of the time of this episode being recorded, which it is about mid-February right now, he has not yet nationalized the police force or the National Guard. He has not declared the, you know, a state of emergency, martial law, or anything like that. I highly believe that this summer or next, perhaps, there will be riots. And he wants riots. Donald Trump wants there to be violence like he saw during the George Floyd protests, because he will not shy away this time from declaring, whether it's declaring martial law, nationalizing the police force. I think we will see the Insurrection Act. I think he wants every reason possible to say that there is need for a state of emergency and that we need to nationalize the police force. Look at what the left is trying to do. I will be shocked if in 2 years we don't see this happen. This was written about, again, as a need to have happen from the Butterfly Revolution. Shut down media and academic institutions. It basically instructed that any liberal institution, whether that be media that didn't agree with Donald Trump or academic institutions, need to be shut down. Donald Trump has talked about several times his plans to shut down organizations, institutions that do not agree with him, including academic institutions. Talks about the Marxist, leftist, communist leaders who are running those institutions and corrupting our youth. And we will likely see these types of things taking place in the near future. Lastly, on this thought, Trump's talked about freedom cities. This is just so on the nose, and it's so interesting and such an odd thing to hear him talk about when he announced this prior to his election during his campaign. He talked about the creation of 10 freedom cities, that there would be bids and the best ideas would, there would be help funding those freedom cities. And it's essentially opening up this ability to create new places for these elite to live and to rule It's exactly what they're talking about doing in their books, The Network State and Patchwork. But here's where it gets interesting. I think a lot of people right now fear Donald Trump, which is, I mean, warranted. But they don't look beyond Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is a tool in more than one way. I think he's being used as a tool by billionaires to set them up in a place where they can take the stage, right? Donald Trump has a following. He is a populist. And frankly, like, he's a good populist. It's working. He has riled up his base in such a way that he was able to get elected, even though there are not that many of them, you know, when considered with the population of the United States. He's been able to activate people, to rally them, to get them passionate, and to get them thinking about and talking about the things that aren't actually what's important, but that drive passion and distract people. It's working magnificently. When I look at social media, sometimes I will get on X just to see what people are saying, what is the narrative, and I can't believe it. I mean, today I was scrolling through and it was just racist. I mean, and not like overt or covert racism like you will often see. Overt racism, tweet after tweet after tweet, post after post, talking about, and these things are being promoted to me. They're being shown to me, even though I do not follow these people. This obviously, like, I'm not, the algorithm should have no reason to believe that I would want to view racist material. But it's just overtly racist, and it's insane. Donald Trump is a narcissist, and this is what's interesting. Donald Trump wants success for Donald Trump. I don't think that he really knows about, agrees with, or cares about the techno-billionaire wet dream. I think that he actually shies away from it. I've heard that he tries to kind of keep J.D. Vance in line with what he's trying to accomplish and staying away from the techno-billionaire side of things. And honestly, I think Donald Trump says, how can I have more power? How can I have more money? How can I make myself look good and have the most fun doing it as I can? And I think that plays into the hands of techno-billionaires as they can basically put him into this position. And he is he's a bull in the China shop. He is the guy who can just go in and wreak havoc, cause chaos, help dismantle our institutions, help dismantle democracy, and they are then able to take advantage of the chaos created. Donald Trump's inexperience and malleability also allows for him to be swayed, again, by money, by threats, by whatever it is. He's the kind of guy I feel like that you could whisper in his ear, you know, hey, Donald Trump, you should do this. This will make you look really good. People will really like you if you do this, and you'll get like kickbacks if you do it. So just do it. And he'll just do it, right? As long as you make him believe that it's his idea and he gets the credit for it. And then lastly, why is he a great tool? Well, his age. Donald Trump is on his way out, right? This man is, I can't remember his age. Is he 79, something like that? By the time this term ends, he would be in the 80s. And that's if he's not already in his 80s. I can't remember. He's old. He is not the kind of guy that is looking at the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years and giving any sort of crap of what the future looks like. He really only cares about the now, and they are able to take advantage of that. So what does that mean is next in their eyes? Well, Donald Trump goes away. I think a lot of people are, you know, the average person is like, oh, Donald Trump's going to try and go for a third term, and he's talked about that. And I do not think in any way that is the threat. He may try for it. He may even succeed. I don't know. But that's not what I'm most worried about. A lot of people say, I wish that Donald Trump would, you know, have a heart attack or die in his sleep, or, you know, that the next whatever guy at the rally doesn't miss. And I don't think that's the right approach. I think they want Donald Trump out of the way. A lot of people will say that they think, and this is more of like, everything here is just theorizing, right? Which could now become more of a, on the lines of conspiracy theories. Who knows what this is going to be? But some people say, I think that they're going to let Donald Trump be the bull in the China shop for 2 years. He's going to wreak the havoc that he's going to wreak, and then they will remove him. I'll let you use your imagination on what that means. And that when they do, because he will have served 2 years, that means that J.D. Vance is in a place to be able to step in and take control for the next 2 years, and he could still be elected for two more full terms. In that way, he could legally run for 10 full years. And who knows if they have any intention to do things illegally, but that would allow for, at the very least, that to be one less fight that they would have to make. So Donald Trump goes away. At that point, the government's gutted. The economy is in tatters, most likely. The Overton window has shifted at this point for MAGA. And not just for MAGA, but for everyone. But for MAGA, the Overton window of what is acceptable has shifted. I think a lot of Trump supporters right now, I think there's this like trying to figure out, are we okay with what's going on? Most of them are just, you hear people so excited about, oh yeah, all the fraud that they're finding and they're screwing over the DEI and whatever. There's a million different things. And that excites many of them. I think some of them are spooked going, what did we vote for? I can't believe this is happening right now. But as the atrocities continue over the next couple of years, as we see things like Insurrection Act invoked and all these different things, and we get away from democracy and more towards what feels like autocracy and oligarchy, they become more and more okay with it and are willing to accept more and more atrocities at that point. And not just atrocities, but the ideas that the billionaires have for new levels of government or new types of government. When billionaires step in, or J.D. Vance steps in, or whoever it is, maybe it's someone who's introduced in the meantime, they're willing to listen when that person says, we shouldn't vote anymore, guys. Like, we've clearly shown that we deserve the position that we're in, and we're making America great again, or whatever that is. So just let us do it. And that won't be such a crazy idea as it might seem to us now, or especially as it would have seemed to us a couple of years ago. The Overton window has already shifted. Because people believe that Donald Trump has power to do what he's doing. He doesn't. At least he doesn't have the legal footing to do it, and he's going to continue to ignore the courts, and it will be really interesting to watch the next couple of years about how all of that is treated and what Democrats and Supreme Court and the legal system will do in general to stop him. But surely the Overton window has shifted. I think of, you know, how long ago was this now? 8 months to 10 months ago, Kellen and I, when he was still on the podcast, we did an episode on, I think it was in April, on Project 2025. And I remember Kellen saying, like, Corey, I don't even think Donald Trump's going to get elected. I don't see how that happens. You know, he's too crazy. There's just no way that people are going to do that. He's got all these legal battles and he's been clearly like shown to be a fraud and a grifter and all this stuff. And I like, Kellen, I'm not trying to throw you under the bus here if you're listening, but I just remember thinking, like, I think Kellen underestimates what's going to happen and how people are going to react and that I think he can get elected. And then same thing with Project 2025, as we did that episode, Kellen offline, off the podcast was like, this stuff is crazy. There's no way that this stuff would take place. It's illegal. I remember him saying, like, this is illegal. He can't just do this stuff. Yeah, like this is a fantasy that maybe they have, but it won't happen. And I remember wanting to believe that. And I remember thinking, yeah, it is illegal. And hopefully that means that none of this will take place. But here we are just a few weeks into the presidency. And he's showing that he doesn't care, that it doesn't matter. Maybe those laws, you know, maybe there's been some challenges in courts and stuff. So maybe some of that will get turned over. But with Trump flooding the zone in the way that he has, doing so much at once, so much of it is likely to slip through the cracks. And even if some of those things are legally challenged successfully, many of them will likely take place. And whether or not, maybe in some miracle dreamland, every of the 200 executive orders that he has done, will be challenged successfully. But by then, how long will that take and how much damage will already have been done? So, yeah, that's... That Overton window shifts. People are more willing to accept the types of things that billionaires are proposing or simply doing without caring what anyone else thinks. And the rest from there is history. Once you have J.D. Vance in power as president, or somebody else who gets introduced between now and that time, it just gives billionaires the place, the power to, it essentially creates this vacuum, right? If you destroy democracy, then the question is, well, okay, what's next? Democracy didn't work. That was the American experiment. We gave it a shot. Guys, we tried really hard. America had a good run with this system, but here's what's better. And they continue to pitch it as a utopia, right? Here is what is going to just work out so amazing and give everyone this amazing quality of life. Let's try this. Just trust us, and we'll see where it takes us. What's interesting is that right now, I think I look at the average Trump voter, and I know many in my life. I have friends who I see post on social media dumb, inflammatory, supportive things, right, about Donald Trump. An example of one today was somebody saying, this is someone who's fairly close to me and who I care about as a person, saying like, oh, you're all complaining about Elon finding all this fraud and waste instead of being mad at the people who created the fraud and the waste. It's just an example of the type of stuff they're saying. And I think the populist ideas have worked so well to get people riled up and distracted and thinking about the wrong things. If those same people who voted this way could see into the future, or if they could see what techno billionaires are talking about, what they want, if they could see the loss of maybe not even just democracy, but freedom and choices, if they could see the future of AI surveillance, of a complete loss of control of their own lives, I think they would change their tune quite severely, because those are the very things that they act like they're scared of the left perpetrating. Lastly, I'll say that this is what the techno billionaires want. They've openly stated it. It doesn't mean that it's what's going to happen, right? It doesn't mean that they will be successful. The reason to talk about this now, especially, is because we're seeing the successful rollout of the butterfly revolution, which was this first step in Yarvin's plan for how to first dismantle democracy so that we can then replace it with what we want. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know what the timeline is. I don't know what can we do to work to prevent it. Revolutions have happened in the past that have been successful. Is that what is necessary at this point? Is that something that comes into play in the future? By then, is there such a military police state, an AI surveillance state in which that becomes impossible? Or, you know, I don't know. I don't want this episode to be like, here is Corey predicting exactly what's going to happen in the future. And like in 20 years, he is saying that we're going to all be in this techno-feudalist state in which we're living in a dictatorship under Peter Thiel. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen. I am saying that's what they want to happen. And I am saying that that is the actions that we're seeing right now are leading us towards that path. Techno-billionaires are so excited right now. They have to be just so happy because they are witnessing this doorway opened for them to creating the future that they want. That's it for the episode. Guys, join me on Patreon. I truly appreciate all of the support in any way that you can provide it. Watching a video, subscribing to the YouTube channel, subscribing on, you know, to the podcast, listening, sharing, whatever ways you can support is so, so helpful. Patreon is a place in which I can post weekly a, you know, 15, 20, 30 minute bonus episode talking about new events as they're happening, as they're rolling out. When you join me there, you get more content from me. You also support me in a small way monetarily. It helps in a lot of ways. These episodes are not easy. I probably spent somewhere around 10, 12 hours preparing this one, putting it together, doing the research, doing the recording, right, getting it edited, the posting, all of that. It's time intensive for me. And while I would do it for free, because I care about it and the content is so important. The bit of support from Patreon is a huge motivator for me. It helps me. Most of that money I put towards preparation. I put it towards helping my family get on that path to freedom and feeling more confident in the future that we're headed towards. So thank you for those that support on Patreon. And if you haven't joined, please consider it. Thanks so much. We'll speak again next week. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.